Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
And now live from Riverside, Iowa, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise, another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Your host this evening, Joe Montaldo.
Another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Joe Montaldo. Tonight's guest is going to be Dr. Roger Lear, which we bring on in a few minutes. There's a couple things I wanted to talk about right quick. Our lovely Doomsday comet, P73. You know, I told y'all about this comet 6 months ago, not to worry about this comet, but still, I got hundreds of emails saying, oh, the comet is coming to kill us. I was just informed today that it broke up yet again into another 40 boulder-sized pieces. And probably will break up another time. So really and truly now it's really not even a threat anymore. It can still do damage, but not any kind of catastrophic damage. Even if it does manage to get close to us, it's not going to bring around the end of the world. Just thought I'd tell you all that. Head of NASA, Michael Griffin, has asked Congress for an additional $1 billion to build the new spacecraft. Well, we know that. He's been wanting to build this ship, right? This is to replace the shuttle ship fleet, which is supposed to retire in 2010. By getting this additional $1 billion, he may be able to get this new spacecraft ready for 2011, which would be nice. I would really, really, really love to see this happen. I'm not sure if it's going to happen or not. NASA is planning on doing some funding cuts in several key areas to pull more money for this. Meanwhile, Discovery will be launched on July 1st. On April 24th, Hubble Space Telescope celebrates 16 years of success. You know, every time I read about this, I'm amazed because it's done 750,000 exposures, probed 24 celestial objects, made 93,000 trips around Earth, over 4,000 astronomers have used it, and it's produced over 6,300 scientific papers. You know, Hubble was one of those things they actually did right. I mean, it was one of those projects that actually, even though it had problems early on, it actually turned out to be a good project, so I was pleasantly surprised by that. Also, Michael Griffin said he expects an invitation to visit China for talks. China would like to join the space effort. They would like to become a member of the space station and start working with the Americans on our space program. Now, I don't know, guys. Big step. That's definitely a big step that's going on, so I don't know whether or not we should do it or not, but something for y'all to think about. I wanted to mention that, but we do have Dr. Roger Lear on with us tonight. So, Dr. Lear, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Roger Lear, let me get you to tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you got started in this, and then we'll start the interview from there. Because I know some of the audience is familiar with you, but some of them maybe not. So, go ahead, Dr. Lear.
Well, I became interested in the UFO subject a long time ago, basically in 1947, and I remember my father bringing the newspaper home and laying it on the table and reading the headline to my mother that said, United States Army Air Force captures flying saucer. And he went on to expound upon the fact that we weren't the only intelligent life in the universe. So I always remembered that headline and the conversation and the following events. Then the rest of my life I've been subject to one synchronistic event after another until I became a member of MOFON. And during that time, I was exposed to an individual who had some x-rays of a foot with two metallic objects in it, which he touted were alien implants. And I thought this was the funniest thing I ever heard of. So I said, well, why don't you just take them out and see what they are? And he said, well, the person would probably like to have that done. However, she... please hang up the phone. I'm sorry about that. two lines here. Anyway, I said, why don't you just take them out and see what they are? And then he said, well, she'd probably like to have that done, but she doesn't have any money and can't pay for the surgery. So I said, well, where does she live? And he said, Texas. And I said, well, if you can get her to California, I'll do the surgery free. So in 1995, we did the first two surgeries for removal of objects, which turned out to be very interesting. Now, we've done 11 surgeries to date, which has produced 12 objects, and all but one of these has some scientific interest. Everything is sent to laboratories such as Los Alamos, New Mexico Tech, and other world-class laboratories for analysis. So that about brings us up to where we are now.
You know, every time I talk with you, and see, because me, the alien implants are very, very interesting thing for this simple fact that this is physical evidence. You know, everybody always talks about circumstantial evidence, but in implants, this is actually physical evidence. Now, in your opinion, Dr. Greer, and I've asked several people who have worked with implants over the years, how many implants do they really think, or say, extraterrestrial, and how many are government? Because I'm just curious to your opinion on this. How many you think may be from an extraterrestrial origin, and how many may be from a military origin or a government origin? And really, in general, how many people really get implants? I'm just curious. Go ahead, Dr. Lear.
Well, I'm probably a poor one to ask about terrestrial types, because we've tailored our research to individuals who have some involvement with the UFO phenomena. Now, we had to set up a very strict set of criteria and protocols in order to do this, and they must have some involvement either with a conscious memory of an abduction or prolonged exposure to a UFO of some kind and so on. So all the ones that we've done, as I said, except one, has had interest and show anomalies that is far ahead of terrestrial science. So now, if you want numbers on these, again, it's only my opinion, but it looks like perhaps 15% of the abductee population may have some kind of an object.
But, you know, when you said that, see, that's interesting to me, because it amazes me that, you know, that's about where we put the actual contactees based on our research. We figure it's somewhere between 10 and 15% of the population that is being messed with. You know, but when you start talking these kind of numbers, you know, when there's 6 billion people involved, you're talking a lot of people here. And, it always amazes me, because people, when I talk to them, a lot of times assume that abductees are being picked up one at a time. I don't think the ordinary, everyday person understands that when they do these abductions, they do them in groups. It's usually quite a few people picked up per visit. So, I don't know, it's just interesting. Now, on the characteristics, I mean, I know y'all found a range of... let me ask you, first off, what makes you think that they're extraterrestrial besides what the individual is telling you?
Well, as I say, we depend depend upon the scientific evidence, both the biological and metallurgical evidence. One, when we look at the biological evidence, the tissues that are removed surrounding the object show no inflammatory reaction whatsoever. Now, that's virtually impossible to get something in the human body and not have the body react to it. If we knew that, why, we could use that to wrap transplanted organs in, and the person would never have to take expensive immune suppression medication for the rest of their life. The other thing we find is that there's a large amount of specialized nerve endings in the area, and they're in an anatomical area where they don't belong. Now, looking at the metallurgy, we find, for example, these objects are highly magnetic, and some of them emit electromagnetic fields up to 6 milligauss. One of them we were able to test with a radio frequency detector before it was removed, and we detected two radio frequencies. Next, you would expect that magnetic objects would contain iron. Well, they do, but when we look at the crystalline structure of the iron, we find that there isn't any. In other words, the iron is what we call amorphous, and being in certain, a government-run laboratories where I've had the occasion to be, I can vouch for the fact that two things. Number one, we probably do know how to make amorphous metals, but number two, we don't know how to make them magnetic. That's one of the metallurgical findings. And, of course, the most telling is on some of the objects we actually find what we call non-terrestrial isotopic ratios, which means that it didn't come from here.
But you see, that's another thing that just fascinates me. And then, now I want to go back, because I had heard you say something about the nerve endings, which just kind of fascinated me in itself. I mean, groups of nerve endings. So, I mean, does it seem like ET is drawing these nerves to this implant? I mean, is this a way they, I don't want to say control, but a way they monitor, I guess, different parts of our bodies or essence of ourselves? I'm not sure. It just seems that if you're going to have all those specialized nerves there, they'd be attached doing something. Could you kind of enlighten me on that, Dr. Weir?
Well, to me, they probably more represent the power supply for the object to get it to function. Now, you're right about them monitoring something, because why would they put something in anybody if they weren't going to see what that, is going to do? And, your guess is as good as mine as to what they're looking for. I mean, we tag bears to look at hibernation habits, and we tag, whales and porpoises and so on, and we study the species that way. But I don't think that an advanced civilization that's intermingling with the Earth population has to use implants to either track us or study what we do. So it could be for looking at biochemical changes in the body, or they could also be looking at the changes in our genetics, especially if our genetics are being manipulated.
But, because the whole thing is just fascinating, because, when I talk to contactees, one of the things they talk about is that ET seems to have the ability to track us through our individual DNA. They can actually physically track our DNA, which is something I know our government is working on, which I find interesting. But that's how contactees say they track us. Now, when I ask contactees, and I've asked a lot of them these days that have had implants, because not all of them have implants, but, I've asked them what they thought the implants were for. What I have noticed is that quite a few of them tell me it's like a booster that allows the two-way telepathic communication. In other words, one way they explain it is ET can keep a link with you all the time, but if you have if there's any way for us to communicate back to them, there would have to be some type of booster involved, because we're simply, I guess, not evolved enough to do it yet. Whether or not that is true, I don't know. I can tell you now, I've probably had about 2,700 contactees tell me that, but I don't know. Like I said, it's still speculation at this point. It comes from a good group of people, but it's still speculation. But it would be interesting if that's what they were being used for. That would explain some of the ones they find in the head. Now, I do know that the implants are found in a lot of other places. Let me ask you this, Dr. Lift. Why do I keep calling you Dr. Greer? I apologize for that, Dr. Lift. My brain is in function mode tonight. I don't know what that's about. There's something I'm getting ready to do about exopolitics here in about 2 months, and I guess it's in the back of my head. And we're getting ready to do about a month and a half worth of exopolitics.
That should be certainly an interesting topic.
Well, the reason we're doing it is I get a lot of requests. A lot of people don't know what exopolitics is. You know, they're like, what is it? I don't understand it, or I don't get it. So I decided we'd bring on some of the big names and let them explain it to them, because they're going to do a better job explaining it than I am personally. So, but anyway, getting back to the implants, well, you'll have to catch those shows. They'll be very interesting shows. But getting back to the implants, how can I say this? When you first off, somebody told me you had one that moved. Is that true?
Yes, we had one that seemed to be totally biological, and before it was removed. You could touch it, and it would move anywhere in a circle. This was in the arm. Anywhere in a circle with about a 2.5-inch diameter. One of the most strangest cases that I've ever come across.
But the reason I was asking you is because I've had heard that before from contactees. They said that they would, like this one lady was telling me, she felt this lump in her wrist and it was kind of scaring her, so she was going to go to the doctor and see what it was about. And she put her finger on it and pushed it and it moved. She said, which kind of scared the daylights out of her. And then she had moved further up her arm, so then she really got worried, so of course she went and ran herself over to the emergency room, and the nurse said that she had seen it move as well, but then no one could find the thing. It just seemed to blend in with its surroundings is the best way I could describe it. I don't know what it was. It was interesting. I was thinking, oh, man, we're getting kind of slick now. We're putting in implants that can move. Those kind of things, you know, tell you right there, that's not our kind of technology. If our government had implants that could move like that, we could cure all kind of diseases. I mean, if we actually had something that small that we could operate through the body, it could actually physically go in and take cancer out at a cellular level, which would really do a really much better job than chemo does. So, I don't know. Technologies for the future, I guess, on Dr. Lear.
Well, these nanoprobes that they're working on now, which are, you know, microscopic, ultra-microscopic. Actually, they're molecular machines. Perhaps someday we'll go in and clean out an artery or destroy cancer cells or whatever. So, yeah, the technology is rapidly advancing, and if we continue to exist, we may be able to take advantage of it. But if we don't, we won't.
Yeah, isn't that the key question? If we, you know, because when you really get into this alien agenda thing, this thing gets kind of scary. But before we touch on that, I had someone just send me an IM asking me. It says, ask him why he thinks the government would want to tag abductees if some of these implants are terrestrial and not ET in origin. What do you think, Dr. Lear? Why would the government want to tag us? I can think of a whole host of reasons, but I'm going to let you answer that. Go ahead.
Well, I guess you could answer that question with the opposite question. Why wouldn't they? If they knew that you were a genuine abductee and there was some, you know, department. And when you say government, well, I use the term government. I'm not talking about the good Congress people, or maybe the president's staff or whatever that does their everyday job in government. These are certain people, you know, that represent governments, maybe represent maybe secret societies, who knows what. Some cabal has been proposed many times. And probably the more knowledge that's available to them, the better, and it's purely for selfish reasons.
Yeah. I don't know. When you get into government, I hate, you know, talking about the government too much because we seem to start having mysterious phone and server problems when we do that. But, well, guys and girls, it's true. Y'all have heard me on this show before when we have touched on particular subjects like the alien agenda or other government subjects where we have started having mysterious phone line and server problems and all kind of weird glitches that you just don't normally see. So I try to...
Well, paying government, you know, paints a lot of people with a broad brush. Certainly not every president knew, you know, about the extraterrestrial hypothesis. We know that some did, and we know that some don't. And I think that's, you know, true of, you know, quote-unquote government in general.
Well, you know what's interesting is it looks like the extraterrestrial thing started with the Democrats. They had originally, like, the first three or four Democratic presidents knew about it. But then in past times, since probably Nixon, it was probably Nixon, Reagan, and the Bushes. Carter and Clinton probably didn't know. I did find it interesting that somewhere along the line, the aliens switched houses. It's one of those goofy things that you see in a pattern and you're kind of wondering, why did it quite happen like that? You know, because it does seem like initially that the Democratic part of our nation, or I should say the Democratic part of our government, was actually the ones who initially made contact with E.T. But in today's society, in the last at least 30 years, it seems like the Republicans have been. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, Dr. Greer. I'm Dr. Greer. What do you think?
I don't know. I really don't think that ETs have any particular respect for dominating political parties. Certainly, if you look in general at the world from a distant view, I don't think you're going to find much differences. I think that what's bothering ETs is basic humanity, not political parties.
Yeah, well, you're probably right about that. No, it's just one of those weird circumstances that, yes, I understand that. Thank you, Virtual Auditorium. I do understand that. they're giving me a hard time right now while I'm talking to you. But, you know, that's another thing. Like, old friend of yours will be on the show next week. And when I bring him on, I don't bring him on anymore to talk about implants. I used to bring him on to talk about implants, but I have you to bring on to talk about implants. So I bring him on to torture him about his personal experience and his so-called that they stopped thing. I love to torture this man about this. I really do. He's a really, you know, he's a fairly okay guy because he does let me torture him, but still, I do torture him. But the reason I'm bringing that up is because being that he was ex-CIA, and I know that Dr. Lear knows this, you know, I give him a hard time because, you know, being military myself, I understand that once you're company, you're always company. There's no real leaving the echelon security agents in this country. I mean, you may retire, but still, you know, you're still part of the structure. And it always interests me when I see these kind of people come into ufology and start speaking on a regular basis because I wonder what exactly, like Nick Pope, Darrell Sims and a few others. I wonder why they're doing this. First off, if they work for these agencies, and like Nick Polk still works for the MOD, if they still working for these agencies and they're giving us information on UFOs, now are we supposed to take this as sincere information, or are we supposed to take this as government's giving them information to give to us, just another part of the cover-up? So I don't know. What do you think, Dr. Lear? I mean, because it gets kind of complicated and sticky when you get into that kind of stuff. And I don't want to get you in any trouble here talking about ufologists, but it's kind of hard for me because I do know about a half a dozen ufologists out there that were either in some high part of security agencies or in a position in the government where it just doesn't seem like the government would allow them to speak about this unless the government was fully aware of what was being said. I don't know. It's just one of those things I think about, you know, another one of those
speakers. Yeah, I lost you there for a second.
Okay. Oh, did you? I'm sorry. Well, no, I was just talking about how we have all these different ufologists these days that have, you know, like prior security clearances or ones that work like Nick Polk that work for the Ministry of Defense. And
I was going to say there's a big difference between those who are admittedly actively involved and those that are supposedly retired. The ones that are actively involved, at least there's some honesty, because you know they work for the agency. Nick Pope being one. I mean, he makes no bones about it. You know, and as to whether someone was in some previous intelligence organization, it's hard to say what the category that places them in.
Well, that's true. And as far as we know, they might have been the guys rolling the mail around from room to room, too. We just don't know. But my point is, if these people, who they say they were, then how can you honestly take the information they give you as good information? Because you know that they were former security, and you know that security agents keep tabs on their people, because the FBI keeps a tab on me. As a matter of fact, I found this out by accident just recently, Doc. One of my customers is a bigwig in the FBI, and we got to talking, and he asked me about my security clearance in the military. Well, I worked on electronics on jets, so I had a very high security clearance. So he ran my name. Come to find out, every 4 years they run a security check on me. Every 4 years. Just to make sure that I'm not out blabbing around or giving away government secrets, because most of what I worked on is still classified, even though it's ancient technology. It's still classified. So when I'm listening to these other so-called people, ufologists, speak about this stuff, I have to take it with a grain of salt, and I have to think...
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. I think everything you hear in the field of ufology...
Oh, that's true.
You should always question... don't accept anything at face value, and as some wise people have said, do your homework.
So,
you know, if I say something and I can't prove it or you don't believe it, then there should be some data to support what I'm saying. That's why I've written a number of books. I've done a number of television shows and videos on this subject, so people don't have to listen to me. They can, one of my DVDs, the latest one, it goes right into the laboratories, and you can hear what the scientific laboratory personnel has to say. My new book that's just out, the second edition of the Alien Scalpel, revised edition, has new material in it, and all the data is printed in the back of the book. So, don't take my word for it. If you want to do your homework, pick up a book and look. If you're scientifically inclined, look at the data and argue with Los Alamos or some of the other laboratories.
You know, it's interesting because about 4 or 5 days ago, Roger, we have an online support group. And we had gotten into a discussion about tonight's show because we knew you were going to be on, and we had started talking about it. And they had quite a few people, it's about 30, 35 people that attended, and they were going on and on about the different things about the implants. And I'm thinking, that I've talked to several key people who work in this field, and none of them are saying what y'all are saying. So I finally got aggravated and said, well, why don't you just go read the websites? Why don't you go do some homework? Go buy a book, do some studying. And then, because one of the things that aggravates me in ufology is how many people want to argue with me about ET and extraterrestrials and don't even have a clue about what actual evidence there is out there and who's done the evidence and how it's supported. And that amazes me in itself. It's actually quite irritating. Because everyone...
There's a lot of folks that, are interested and like to listen to the stories, very well-meaning, and they get involved. And, a novice coming into this field really doesn't know who to listen to because or what to believe or who to believe. And there's not a lot of scientific types that are involved with the subject, unfortunately. So, they can't go to the local science library and look things up. You have a large body of so-called experts out there, astronomers and other scientists, with the same old paganism. They can't get there from here and can't travel faster than the speed of light and all the rest of the baloney.
It is strange. It is, because there's a lot of people who get into this field that, first off, this is one of the things that cracks me up. Everybody thinks I make money doing this. Dr. Lear, when someone tells me, as a matter of fact, I was speaking somewhere, and a lady said, oh, we know you do this because you make a lot of money doing this. And I'm like, and I didn't want to be rude, I really didn't. But it kind of forced the issue, but I didn't want, and I'm thinking to myself, I spent $50,000 on this last year. I'm thinking, yeah, I'm making money. I'm losing money. Boy, but again, I'm going to iterate this again for the umpteenth million times since I started doing this radio show. If you're getting into ufology to make money, you have chosen the wrong profession to enter. There is no money in this, guys. This is like a vacuum that just takes money so you can get the truth. I don't know. It's a strange thing, but it's a good point, Dr. Lear, because I meet a lot of new people coming in, and first off, they don't have a clue who to listen to. There's been a lot of infighting in ufology over the last few years, which has kind of made people stray away from it a little bit. But I've noticed all that seems to have changed, and things seem to be getting back to normal. But, I'm just informed we have to take a break. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalva. I'm sitting and speaking with Dr. Roger Lear, and then when we return, we'll start taking some questions. So please stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
Captain's Log.
According to reports from the Minnesota DNR, we are waist deep in a lake infested with
Captain. The ship is surrounded by exotic species known as Eurasian water milfoil, zebra mussels, and spiny water flea.
Doctor, what's affecting our Vulcan friend?
Jim, it appears the Vulcan's vocal cords are clogged with zebra mussels.
Engineering, beam them up.
Oh, sir, I've got no power. The milfoil's infested with lithium crystals. The spiny water flea are doing chorus line with the photon torpedoes. And our zebra mussels help block out the warp drive.
Bones, is there anything that can be done about these exotic species before they spread to other lakes?
Jim, it's as plain as the nose on your face. Just clean or dry out your boat and drain your bait bucket before sinking into another lake. If you see things hanging from your boat or motor, pull them off. If you don't, it's a hefty fine from the DNR. Remember, clean boats mean clean waters.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
Millions of people are doing it on Pal Talk already. Meet new friends. See and be seen on webcams and share files. With real-time video and the ability to talk to all your AOL, MSN, Yahoo, and ICP buddies from one list. Pal Talk has it all. Join hundreds of chat rooms or start your own. Visit www.paltalk.com today and download the new messenger for free. Pal Talk, communication beyond words.
Good evening, and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Joe Montalva. I'm sitting and speaking with Dr. Roger Lear. It's been very interesting so far. Remember, ladies and gents, if you'd like to use our toll-free number, the toll-free is 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Of course, the local studio audience number is 648-5143. I still want to hear someone call in the Riverside and bug Jeff. Dr. Leo, welcome back. You know, it's been interesting so far, and the alien implants just fascinate me. They really do. Now, material-wise, I mean, is there like a consistent material these are being made out of, or is some like crystal, metal, or materials we can't analyze? I'm just curious, Dr. Leo.
Well, we've subdivided what we found into several subcategories. One are metallic, which are covered with a biological coating. Another are non-metallic. And the third is this biological one, which we talked about a few minutes ago. Now, in the metallic portion of them, we have four that are exactly the same. When you look at them with from a morphological standpoint, and the four also contain large amounts of iron, and the iron is amorphous and they're highly magnetic and capable of putting out electromagnetic fields. So those are the basic similarities.
Well, I'll tell you what, before I go any further, Jeff's informed me we have John from the Netherlands on the line. John, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Very soft, but I can hear you. My question to Dr. Lear is, what kind of frequencies are they, and if they are they to be blocked? Like, you know, if you have a mobile phone, some places you can actually block certain frequencies that you cannot use the mobile phone anymore. Is it possible to figure out how to, you know, neutralize the signals that the implants use?
What do you think?
Well, we're in the very, very early stages of research, and unfortunately to do the kind of things you're suggesting requires more equipment and more funding. We don't have a lot of funding, and so we just kind of do the best we can. In fact, we can't even legitimately say that the two frequencies, which I don't have in front of me, but I can tell you that they were both in the FM band. We don't know whether they were originating with the object or actually working as a harmonic off of some other frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
We also don't know whether these could be devices for just relaying a signal, or perhaps they are generating a signal in the FM band when actually the source is an energy field which is not an electromagnetic spectrum at all. So it can get very, very complicated. And the way to answer the questions, and you ask very good questions, is to be able to do this in depth. And as I said, it requires more funding and more equipment and a lot more time. Believe me, I'd love to do it. And that's why I'm trying to do this film, a full-screen entertainment film called Earth's Original Sin. And if we can be fortunate enough to get this on the major screen, we're going to take all the funds and actually build a physical plant here in California where we can study the physical evidence of this subject in a very scientific manner. And for people like yourself that inquire about things like radio frequencies and electronics, perhaps we can come up with a rather solid answer.
Okay, thank you for the answer.
All right, well, John, thanks for calling in, man.
Okay, bye.
I was glad to see him call in. Yeah, that's one of the things I like about doing the show. You never know who's going to call in from what country. It's kind of a nice plug. You know, getting back, these biological implants seem to be the ones that fascinate me the most for some reason. I'm just wondering what kind of properties they have, what they could be being used for. I mean, it's obvious that they're using them biologically because it makes it a lot harder to find them in any kind of CAT scans or anything like that. And the simple fact that they have the ability to move and hide seems to be another reason they were using them. But I'm just curious of what these things could be doing inside the body. Any ideas, Dr. Lear?
Well, as I said, I've been asking this question of myself since I got started in this. You know, what's the function? What do they do? And I'm convinced that the human race is being genetically manipulated. I say that for two reasons. That number one, the abduction phenomena itself, and probably as well as the implant phenomena, is not new. It may be going on for thousands of years. If you consider our anthropological knowledge of our origins and the fact that we don't seem to be able to locate a missing link, and that we find Homo sapien prints, footprints along with Neanderthal, we tend to believe that we're not particular descendants from prehistoric man and may be the result of external genetic manipulation. So if that's a possibility, if you can just accept that as a criteria for a theory, and then you go for a few thousand years and look at what man has done with ourselves and with the planet, it's not such a wonderful thing, looking at it from a distance. Now, when we get to the point where we're just doing it to ourselves and maybe involving our own planet, that may be one level, but when we're doing it to ourselves and then interfering with something else, like the release of atomic energy, which started back in the 40s, and we had a huge flap of UFO stuff that went on in 46, 47, and on. Perhaps they're becoming more concerned that we're not only a danger to ourselves and the planet, but perhaps to non-terrestrial neighbors, our solar system, or even further to interfere with some of the universal laws. So interested in us and want to help solve the problem, and perhaps not all visitors are of the same ilk, but perhaps they're coming here and maybe manipulating our genetics. So I've done a study with the 17 functional growth characteristics in children, and we looked at it over a 40-year period, and we see that they've been accelerated from 16 to 80%. Now, that's a large acceleration, too large for certainly an evolutionary trend, even what we call fast evolution. And then we try and find other reasons for this. Is it environment? Well, the statistics hold across the world, so we're talking about many different various environments, some people with televisions, others with no televisions, some people with adequate food, others that are starving, some that are perhaps getting more ultraviolet and cosmic ray infiltration, and others with less, different clothing, total differences, but the statistics seem to be the same. So you can pretty well eliminate the evolution and environment, but then you can look at mutation. Well, mutations are usually nonspecific. You might find a baby born with five fingers in one hand, six on the other, or one blue eye, or one brown eye. But when we look at these things, again, they're all standard. These are specific changes in growth functional behavior. And in case I'm confusing our audience, what I'm talking about is, for example, the age a baby will raise its head, when they stand up, when they can walk, when they can stair climb, the age of speech, simple speech, complex speech. These are the things that I'm talking about, not things like IQ, which are variable, highly variable. So these have been accelerated, and if we don't like the evolutionary reason, and when we don't like the environmental reason, and we don't accept mutations, then logically there's only two things left. One is an act of God. And if you're a devout theist, then sit down, smile, and be happy because this is an act of God, and that's the way things are going. And if you're not a devout theist and seeking answers in another vein, then the only other one is direct manipulation of our genetics. So, again, all speculative, all theory, my own, maybe a few others too. Perhaps the way to really solve the problems here on Earth is to eliminate the source, and the source is innate in the human being. So perhaps those that fiddled with us 6,000 years ago are back fiddling with us again, and maybe changing the human nature, so to speak, so that we can stop the things we're doing, save the planet, and henceforth not affect intelligences or universal laws anyway. Anyway, that's my theory in a nutshell.
Well, it's interesting because I was just talking with Lloyd Pye about this a few months back. As you know, before he got into the Star Child skull, he was into human origins. That's what he did. And we got to talking about Bigfoot one evening on the radio show. And he was talking about maybe that he favored us over the natural selection on the planet, which probably was what Bigfoot is today. It would have been our normal course of evolution from ape to on through the evolution into where it is today. And they said they just favored this matrix more than that matrix. They altered it, changed it, moved it forward to the species that it is today. what irritates me about extraterrestrials in general is they feel like they can do this without any explanation and without any recourse. Because they just abduct people, not randomly, because it's not random, but they just abduct people whenever they feel like it, whenever it fits to what they need to be doing with that individual at the time. No real explanation why, not even really a thank you for going along with the program. Just pick you up, do what they got to do, and drop you back off, which I do understand that we do this ourselves. As humans, we do this to other animals. Now, this, I guess, is where it comes into play. If an animal is sentient, shouldn't you have to ask before you interfere, unless you created that species? And then that gets into a whole other thing. Because, matter of fact, here's another thing for you, Dr. Lear. Last night I was discussing this with a group of people. We were talking about rights and what extraterrestrials are doing. Now, this is an important question. And ladies and gentlemen in the audience who's listening to us, y'all pay attention to this. This is really important. Should clones, if let's say tomorrow the government said we could clone people, will clones have rights? If we create a human, will that human have rights as a clone? Will they have rights? Or will we be able to do whatever we want to this person because they are created species by man? See, and that's the question, because if extraterrestrials have interfered with us or even created us in some shape, form, or fashion, do we actually have rights? Can ET do what they want to do without consulting us or bothering with us? Do they even feel that we are sentient, for that matter, at least in a sentient form as they consider it? So these are all questions that have to be answered, and the bad part is all these questions scare the hell out of me because I don't think most of the answers are going to be all that good. What do you think, Dr. Lear?
Well, I'll tell you, you certainly pose an adequate paradox. The question, ultimate question is, what is a sentient being? I don't have the answer to that, but you bring up some interesting things because, who are the extraterrestrials? We may be actually the extraterrestrials. Are we sentient? Are we not? And what do they have the rights to do what they do? Well, people often look at things as to whether they're good or whether they're bad, but all we can say is if you see what's going on, something is going on. Something is going on, and as I alluded to before, it may not all be for the same reason. Now, David Jacobs thinks there's a group here that's, building hybrids, and it's possible that this is a backup in case this planet is destroyed or we destroy ourselves. They'll have some ability to have our human genetics and maybe use it somewhere else or even repopulate this place if there's a planet left. So there may be different motives from different groups. And then to add a little absurdity to the supplementity, how do we know that every entity that comes here is on some kind of an organized mission in the first place? Perhaps it's Joe and his family who lives in a far off galaxy on the planet Mug, who says, let's go down to Sam's Renaissance lot this weekend, dear, and take the kids, and we'll hear about this wonderful little blue planet in one of the extended arms of the Milky Way galaxy. We'll shoot down there, we'll pack a lunch, we'll cloak so nobody sees us, and we'll watch it. I hear they kill themselves, and they blow up bombs, and they destroy their planet, and hey, we'll just sit up there, and we'll have a ball. So, that's how far you can extend it to trying to understand the subject.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. I mean, the more you get into this, like you specialize in alien implants, we specialize in abduction research and so on and so forth, which is a good thing to see happening in ufology. It used to be everybody was so spread thin that they really couldn't, there wasn't any coherence of information going on. At least today, there is some solid information being retrieved, pertinent information to what's happening to these people. So that's a big plus in itself. I'm glad to see that kind of stuff going on. Because, you know, when I got involved with this 23 years ago, there was maybe six people in ufology that were worth talking to. The other 40 or 50 that were out there were just complete scatterbrains that had no idea what they were talking about. At least today there seems to be about 20 or 25 of them out there that are worth talking to, that are really doing their homework and really trying to get to the bottom of this for no other reason. You know, that's one of the things I tell the listening audience and members of ICAR. When you're looking for an investigator, be sure that the investigator is doing this for no other reasons than they're looking for the truth. Because it's really important. I mean, if they have an alternative agenda, then that agenda is going to come into play into their research. But if they don't, then the research will be exactly what it is. For us, it's weird because when I got started in this, I didn't know a damn thing about contactees. I thought they were all crazy, Doctor. I really did. I thought they were all flipping nutcases. Of course, here I am 23 years later. I know that that's not true. They're not all nutcases, and quite a few of them seem to be quite legitimate people with careers, children, and families, and lives, and things at stake. You know, that always amazes me, and I don't know how true this is for you, but occasionally I'll get someone who comes in, says they're a contactee, and will tell me something along the lines, you know, what their career is, usually somewhere, a very influential career somewhere. You know, got wife and kids. Wife's got a real influential career. Kids are all in private schools and stuff. You know, they have a lot at stake here to be coming forward and telling someone they're a contactee. And it takes a lot of trust to contact someone like me and give them all of this personal information, because as far as you know, tomorrow morning I could get on the radio and just start blabbing my mouth, which I don't, but it is, they're still taking that at faith. I mean, we do have documents and all, we sign for disclosure agreements and stuff, but still, they are taking it at faith. And it amazes me that we're getting more and more and more of these people. You know, we always brag about having over 7,000 cases investigated, which is true, but we don't count any of our cases that we pick up online or that we've met online or things like that. Those cases aren't counted in the groups, and those cases probably number in the several thousands these days. So, you know, we have a big, big, big database to draw from when it comes to contactees. And one of the nice things is now, these days, Dr. Lear, is we keep about 20 or 25 contactees on staff, always working, doing support with people online, things like that, collecting information, looking for things that may, you know, be the same in abduction cases and stuff like that. But the reason I'm bringing all this up is I've been recently talking with a group of them who may or may not have implants. Some of them are actually located in California. So probably what I'm going to have them do in the next few weeks is drop you an email, and then I'll just let you deal with it because we're not set up to do implants. All we can do is refer to people because we're simply, we don't have a good enough doctor on staff that I would trust to do this with, to be honest with you. But I just wanted to know your opinion. Is it okay if we refer people to you before I start doing that?
Absolutely. I certainly give them my private email, because on the regular email I run about 300 behind.
No, that's
if it's coming. If it's coming from you, you know, I'll act on it right away.
Well, some people I got a dozen or so emails these days. The ICAR email address, which is my primary email address, gets several hundred a day, so it's kind of a pain. But
you know what I'm talking about then.
Yeah, and I do have personal emails that I give out to different contactees. But, you know, well, I got you the phone. Now, I know you've worked with other doctors over the years, and you've talked with other people, but when I first got involved with this 23 years ago, around 3 years or 4 years after I was really involved in this, I had learned about the implants, which I found fascinating, but I had learned about what they like to call today the missing baby syndrome. We had talked to something like, it was 2,600, this is back when I was still with MUFON, by the way. We had talked to about 2,600 doctors that had reviewed over 6,000 cases where women had came in, been tested, either had a blood test or another type of test, was proven they were pregnant. Even some of these women even had ultrasounds at their third month. And so they had the original blood work on the person. Some of them came with ultrasounds. But in every case, right at the 3-month point, the baby just disappeared. It wasn't terminated. They ruled out spontaneous abortion. They ruled out pretty much everything. Because what the doctors found interesting was not only was the baby gone, but the woman's hormones seemed to be back in balance, and this seemed to happen overnight. Well, you're a doctor. You know this is not just something that just happens overnight. Any guys who's been married to a pregnant woman before knows this is not something that happens overnight. And those cases really intrigue me because, you know, I'm thinking, well, damn, that's at least 5,000 babies, 6,000 babies that are going AFK. No one knows what happened to them. And then all of a sudden, we start having all these contactees start telling us about seeing these hybrid children. Then it really freaked me out. I got to say that just kind of freaked me out. But anyway, I've been babbling. The point is what I want to know is, have you run across any of these missing baby cases yourself?
Well, I've had a couple through the years that I've been exposed to. One turned out to be an absolute fraud, which was specifically perpetrated to fool us and involved someone who was on a hospital staff. And the other one was a case where I did see an ultrasound, but the pregnancy test was not available and other data was not available. So I'm still looking, if someone has, we need the right data. We need a positive pregnancy test. We need a positive ultrasound. We need to look at the hormone levels, pre-pregnancy, hormone levels during the pregnancy and post-pregnancy. And if there are any witnesses to, what might have happened. So I haven't found anybody yet that fills all the criteria, but if I'm still doing it next year or the following year, you never know.
It is something we track. I'm not 100% convinced on. I'm not 100% convinced that everybody I've talked to. A couple of these women, because their character and the doctor's character, I'm convinced in those. They seem to have researched it really hard, and they seem to be able to authenticate what they're saying pretty well. So that's an interesting thing, but that doesn't prove extraterrestrial. And I was trying to explain this to a gentleman the other day because he was arguing with me. He said, no, that proves E.T. did it. I said, no. I said, the woman said it was E.T. Doesn't mean the government didn't go in there and implant a memory and take these babies. I said, you can't just assume this was extraterrestrial. Now, the evidence does point to extraterrestrial, but still, can't rule out Uncle Sam. Or not Uncle Sam, whatever this black government is that we have running around these days. The ones that are in charge of Homeland. Yeah, guys, Homeland. FEMA's history now. We used to always worry about FEMA because FEMA's still the only agency that can declare martial law without the president's consent. But thanks to Katrina, ladies and gentlemen, FEMA is pretty much a useless organization. So y'all better kind of keep an eye out for Homeland these days. But getting back to the implants, I just had to say that, sorry. Getting back to the implants, one of the other things I find fascinating about these implants is like when we were talking about the missing babies just now. You know, we figure abduction starts before birth because the mother's being abducted, so really and truly all contactees are abducted before birth and probably shortly after as well. We always, because most of the memories we retrieve were around ages 4 and 5, it seemed, when contact started. But after talking to the mothers, we realized that, no, this was, contact was starting at a much earlier age than this. But reason I'm bringing this up is because I'm trying to figure out when exactly these implants are being put in. What's like the youngest person you've retrieved an implant from? Because I'm curious to see what ages this may start happening at. Go ahead, Dr. Weir.
Okay, well, probably the youngest is in the 30s, but we had one who we believe was put in somewhere around 6 years of age and had it for a number of years. So I guess that's a simple way to answer the question.
Yeah, well, see, because I was curious, because most of the people I've met who have had implants, were in their early 30s, mid-40s, stuff like that. And I hadn't been running across any young people. Now, we do know that, up until puberty, contact is in a specific form. It's not really a hostile type form. We also know starting at puberty to about age 30 that contact is a fairly unpleasant experience. And then after that, it seems to change again. But I was just curious. I'm figuring that they must tag these people in their late 20s as they're getting through with what they've been doing through all those breeding years and puberty years and stuff. I figure that must be when they're tagging them. They must be wanting to monitor how the individual... I'm just not sure what it is that they're monitoring. I guess that's what's making me crazy. Because we know that they... Well, go ahead, Dr. Lynn. Oh, I'm sorry. We got to go to break right quick. Hold on a second. Ladies and gentlemen, I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalva. I'm sitting and speaking with Dr. Roger Lear, and as soon as we return, we'll start taking some more questions, so please stay tuned.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air, would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
Captain's Log.
According to reports from the Minnesota DNR, we are waist deep in a lake infested with...
Captain, the ship is surrounded by exotic species known as Eurasian water milfoil, zebra mussels, and spiny water flea.
Doctor, what's affecting our Vulcan friend?
Jim, it appears the Vulcan's vocal cords are clogged with zebra mussels.
Engineering, beam them up.
Oh, sir, I got no power. The milfoil's infested with lithium crystals. The spiny water flea are doing chorus line with the photon torpedoes. And the zebra mussels have blocked out the warp drive.
Bones, is there anything that can be done about these exotic species before they spread to other lakes?
Jim, it's plain as the nose on your face. Just clean or dry out your boat and drain your bait bucket before sinking into another lake. If you see things hanging from your boat or motor, pull them off. If you don't, it's a hefty fine from the DNR. Remember, clean boats mean clean waters.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Millions of people are doing it on PalTalk already. Meet new friends. See and be seen on webcams and share files. With real-time video and the ability to talk to all your AOL, MSN, Yahoo, and ICQ buddies from one list. PalTalk has it all. Join hundreds of chat rooms or start your own. Visit www.paltalk.com today and download the new messenger for free. PalTalk, communication beyond words.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Joe Montalva. I'm sitting and speaking with Dr. Roger Lear. We're going to get right back into this in here in just one second. For the person who sent me the message about Nick Pope, yes, he still works for the Ministry of Defense. He still works for MOD, and trust me, because I've asked him umpteen million questions, when he says, Joe, you know I can't answer that. I still work for the MOD. So, yeah, he still works for him. Welcome back, Dr. Lee. I had to say that because I keep getting asked, and he does still work for the Ministry of Defense. You know, he's funny when you ask.
Certainly he does.
Well, yeah, he still does, and he's funny because every now and then I'll ask him a question, which I know he can't answer when I ask him the question, but I just like to watch him squirm because, you know, he wants to answer the question, but he knows if he does, he's going to get his butt in trouble. So he always finally refers to, you know, I can't answer that question. You know, I can't. I'm like, well, I just want to, I got to ask, Dad. That's my job. I got to ask. Now, you know, Dr. Lear, for the layman, who is trying to figure out, the layman contactee, I should say, or abductee, who is trying to figure out if they may or may not have an implant, what do you recommend? I mean, is there any common tools that can be used to find them, black lights, metal detectors, anything along those lines? I'm just curious.
Well, black lights are always useful following an abduction or a suspicious abduction, or suspicion of an abduction, looking for areas that are fluorescent. Any sudden pain or discomfort in an area which occurs overnight, in other words, in the morning, at night when you went to bed, you were fine, but all of a sudden there's a painful spot when you wake up in the morning on your wrist. Maybe the skin is a little bit red. When you push on it, it may hurt. That's a suspicion. If it doesn't go away or you haven't been bitten by an ant or some such thing, or a mosquito. Any suspicious lumps that, again, occur, for example, for a cyst to occur, it takes some time. Things start small and gets gradually bigger. Lesions that appear under the skin or on the skin that occur over the night are those things which you want to be always cognizant of, look into. If you have been subject to the known abduction phenomena, or you have suspicions that you are, with dreams or actual long periods of contact, you saw something relatively close and had missing time or other things involved in the abduction phenomena, and then you find a mark or something that's suspicious, again, you might think of an implant. There are several devices for looking for metallic objects. Certainly a stud finder. If you put that over the area and the stud finder becomes activated, there's a possibility that you got a piece of metal down below. Things like that make mainly common sense.
Well, guys, let me clarify something. If you're going to use a stud finder, use the metal type. Okay, because the type we use just locates anything that's solid inside of you. So every time it would hit a bone, it'd beep. All right, so there's two types.
Yeah, well, they have those more sophisticated stud finders today, which will use non-metallic. In other words, if you just hit a stud or a joist, well, it's going to go off. I'm talking about the real simple kind that's just a basic pendulum magnet when you hit a nail.
Yeah.
For example, if you're going over a board, you hit a nail, this thing stands straight up.
Yeah, that's and guys, those are easy. They're like $3 to buy. They're not real expensive. Matter of fact, I've seen a guy running them across. He had a spot on his arm. Every time he ran it, it would flip the thing. He never did find out what it was. He was too chicken to go to the doctor to see what was in his arm. I told him, man, you go check that out. I said, something in there has got a magnetic polarity on it. Oh, no, man, it's just a weird thing that happens. It was funny. One of the guys that worked for us. But yeah, those are real easy. They're really easy to find. You can find them in any hardware, any Walmart, Kmart, anything like that. They're $2, $3. They're not really expensive. Because don't go out and buy a $45 stud finder, guys. That's not what we're talking about. Okay? Because
right.
It's not going to work for you. It's just going to find your bones. That's all it's going to do. Oh, man. But you got to tell them stuff like that, because we'll be getting emails for weeks, Dr. Lear, if you're spending thousands of dollars on stud finders.
And, of course, you know, the simple thing is, if there's any suspicion that you do have some kind of an object, go in and get an x-ray taken.
Oh, I agree. I tell everyone all the time we get a check. Well, we tell them that. What's that? Does ET provide implant technology for world governments? That's an interesting question, Jeff. What do you think, Dr. Lear?
Repeat the question, please.
He was just asking if ET may provide implant technology to the government.
Oh, Well, that's certainly speculative. If you're one of those that think that there has been technological exchanges between non-terrestrial intelligences, and again, I don't like to paint government with a broad brush, but you can speculate if there had been exchanges, why this could possibly be part of one of the exchange programs.
I don't know. I know the V-chips, which just seem to be technology that, came along over time. We've been knowing about the V-chips for about 30 years, and it seems like in the last 10, they got them down quite well, the size of a grain of rice, pretty much undetectable in the human body. And
One of the things that people are not aware of, everybody looks at the occult side of this human implant stuff, but you got to realize that as good as we get and as small as we can make them, they still cause inflammatory responses in the body, and what you don't hear is how many have been put in dogs or cats that are spit out because it'll spit them out like a sliver. They don't have the technology for keeping the rejection reaction under control. All they've done is devise materials that are, and I repeat this, relatively inert, like we use when we do bone surgery, and we use pieces of titanium metal and other materials for long-term bone pinnings or screws or plates or pins and so on. If you biopsy these over a number of years, you're going to see change. There's oxidation reactions and all sorts of inflammatory tissue that's around the area. So we don't know how to do that.
And it's interesting you said that because I had read, I was in a medical journal just recently, I had read it. A friend of mine sent it to me because he thought it was interesting because of some of the implants that were found inside a tissue sac. One of the major hospitals is working with growing tissue to install things like implants. Or when you have to have something, they want to be able to cap it off with some kind of flesh or something so that the body doesn't reject it.
Yeah, well, that's what I have, and I can't get a dime from anybody because I believe that this biological coating that wraps this metal is exactly that same stuff. And if we could study it and look at the DNA and the molecular structure of it and reproduce it, you could wrap a pin, screw, a heart, a kidney, or anything else in it, and the patient wouldn't have to take any rejection, anti-rejection medication. But you can't raise a dime.
Yeah, and see, that's what, and it does seem, but that's what I was saying. You seem to have this, ET seems to be using this. We have our government, well, not even our government, these are private hospitals that are working on this stuff, seem to be following suit. Somebody out there is paying attention to what's being said. It's like the old sci-fi things, like when you ask the gentleman who invented the laser where to get the idea from, and he tells you Buck Rogers. It's one of those things. Somebody out there is listening because somebody thought this was a good idea because they're working on it now. Now, I don't know.
Well, they say also that necessity is the mother of invention. And once you put out something in the universal consciousness, it actually can become fact. If every single one of us in the United States thought of some kind of alternate fuel instead of using $4 gasoline, probably within a month or two, somebody would come up with some weed you could grow in the backyard and then squish it and burn it in your tank.
Well, now pretty much they have that now. We just don't want to use that because then we don't want it. For some reason, the U.S. doesn't feel like we could dedicate one state to grain production, which is enough to supply ethanol for the entire country. And it would only be like 85 cents a gallon. We don't want to do that.
Well, look at Brazil. 1977, they put into a law that in 30 years, which will be 2007, there will be no automobiles running in Brazil on petroleum fuels. Now, they're 97%. Today, I got a year to go, so they're getting their ethanol from sugar, and they course, they're big sugar producers.
Yeah, well, so is the United States. I mean, all the southern states can produce sugar in mass quantities. But that's the thing. Our government doesn't want to do that because it will cripple the oil industry. Because, you know, the United States is such a big buyer of petroleum. For the petroleum industry to lose this kind of purchasing power would cripple them. Of course, it would drop the price of oil for everybody in the world quite considerably, if the U.S. wasn't buying so much. But I see we got a hand up in the virtual room. So, Gossamer777, why don't you give us your first name and location, and you're live on air with Dr. Roger Weir.
Yes, good evening, Dr. Lear. My name is David Andrew. I'm the Arizona State Director for ICAR, and I have had the chance to meet you several times at conferences, most recently at the Laughlin Conference. Dr. Lear, I was curious. I know you've done work with implants that are usually in people's extremities, arms, legs, that sort of thing. But I'm curious, have you ever been made aware of or come across any cases where the implant was actually in a person's brain or anywhere in their head like that? Thank you.
Very simple answer, and that is no. I get many emails about people who think they've got some kind of a brain implant, but I've never seen any evidence on an X-ray, a CAT scan, or an MRI of anything that's visible in the cranial area. I shouldn't say within the brain. I have a case now which there's something in one of the sinus tracts, frontal sinus, but not in the brain. I also haven't seen any of the deep in a body, a cavity, but that's just my own personal experience. I'm not saying they don't exist. It's just that with my sampling, I haven't seen them.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so, yeah, I have heard a couple people talk about implants behind their temple, which in itself kind of intrigues me. But I've never seen any, so until I see one, I'm going to be very, very skeptical about those kind of things. You know, I'm kind of a hands-on kind of person. I like to see stuff, experience it for myself firsthand. I figure that's the best way to get information is experience it yourself firsthand, or at least go straight to the horse's mouth and not talk to the 26 people between you and the horse. Because you know how people like to exaggerate stuff. A simple little contact can turn into this massive mess by the time it gets to you. So I always have a tendency to go straight to the horse's mouth when it comes to stuff like this. And it's one of the advantages of doing the show that I can invite the guests on and talk to them directly on the show, which is a big plus. It speeds my research along immensely, and I'm sure it does for a lot of the listening audience as well. Now, you know, we're getting back to the government implants or the V-chip. I do know, for the person I just seen with that law thing in the room, that there is a law on the books in the United States. Well, it's not on the books yet. It's actually going to go in front of Congress. They're going to vote on giving our kids chips from age 5 to age 18. Then after 18, the child can elect to have the chip removed. But they want to make it mandatory in the United States. They want to give prisoners and children chips. They want to make it a mandatory thing. They say it's a sure way of tracking your child if they're abducted or something. And it's not a bad idea. See, my problem with this is they're not going to try to give me a chip because they know better. And they're not going to try to give you a chip because they know better. But if they give them to the kids, and then some of those kids will just keep the chip when they grow up, and of course their kids are going to get chipped. By the fourth or fifth generation of children, everybody will just keep their chip. It'll just be a part of everyday life, and that'll just be how it is. And that kind of worries me. That's Big Brother at its best running around. So, I don't know, guys. Cameras on every corner, chips. I don't know if it's quite the place I bought into.
Well, any advanced technology can be used for good or evil. I remember some years ago, I got a call from David Adair. Remember David?
Yeah, I remember David.
Yeah, well, he was in Florida working with a company, and he had come up with a chip, very same thing you're talking about, that could be implanted in children, and for, you know, if anyone was kidnapped or molested or whatever, it could be found. I'm telling you, it was like in a matter of minutes by using satellite technology. So, you know, for that purpose, you know, it's a wonderful thing. But then, just as you said, you could take you know, the good, and you could turn it into evil. You know, maybe, I know there's a lot of cameras in other countries that are observing people on the streets. And they've actually proven statistically that when people are under observation with a camera, crime is reduced. But again, it could be turned around and it's fine. Everybody that buys a car with OnStar, I mean, you don't seem to realize it's a wonderful thing. To, you know, if you get stuck in an emergency or an auto accident, car's locked and you can't get in, it's immediate help that's available. But you can also be tracked by any satellite anywhere. So there's advanced technology can either be good or evil, depending upon how it's used.
You know, it was funny because when my mom bought her new Cadillac, she got OnStar on board, but she wasn't going to get it. She said, well, I don't know if I want people to know where I'm at all the time. I'm like, well, Mom, it doesn't matter. They have a chip in the box anyway. I said, any car made after the year 2000 has a GPS chip in it. I said, that's just part of it. I said, you notice they never asked any of us permission to do that. That's the car dealers do that so they can recover the car if it's stolen. But, so you might as well have OnStar because they know where you are anyway. So she has it. She's quite happy with it, too. It's a really nice system.
It's a good system. It's a real safety device. But it's not for anybody that wants to hide. Don't hide in your Cadillac with OnStar. But, years, you're talking about 1990. It was years before in 1990 when cars just started to use the computer. I remember I had a 69 Lincoln Mark III, and it had, I think, 12 computers in it. Well, what people didn't know was any one of those computers was fixed to relay mechanical information back to the car manufacturer. And that's been going on for years.
Oh, yeah. It has been going on for years. Because, the car manufacturers say it helps them to evaluate crash problems, longevity of vehicles. And it does. I mean, a lot of what's being done is legitimate, and it is beneficial for the public. Nowadays, they have some of the newer cars have what they call the black box that records accident details, so the police can record it and look at it for themselves. So, we're getting more advanced. And things like that, I think, is good. As far as the chip itself goes, you know, I think that's an individual choice. You know, I think that should
be. I think so, too. I mean, what if you had a pet, like a dog or something? Is it good or bad? I think it would be. I can't find anything evil with that. I mean, if your dog is lost or stolen, certainly, and even to have biomedical records for a dog or for a pet, probably a wonderful thing.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, even with these talk about these chips, I mean, first off, if you're not doing anything illegal, the chip is probably not going to be a bad thing for you. The only thing I can see if the chip will ever turn out to be bad is if our government, for some reason, decides to start using it to round up people or for, you know, biological reasons. In other words, discriminated against people because your DNA is not quite as good as the other person's. Otherwise than that, I can't see where this chip is really that bad of a thing. I mean, I can tell y'all this, if the chip would have been available when my son was a teenager, he'd have had a chip, okay? But he would have, because think about it, Dr. Lee, I could have walked up to my laptop, clicked in his little name, he came up, showed me right where his little butt was, I'd have known if he was lying, telling the truth, because I would have known where he was. And you can bet this, if there would have been chips when I was a kid, my mom would have had one in me. So I don't necessarily see where it's a bad thing. I see where it can have bad implications in the future. But I really think that's up to the people and what kind of control we allow the government to have with these chips.
Exactly. As I said, any technology can be used for evil as well as for good. But remember what illegal means. Illegal is a sick bird.
With that,
there's silence.
It went quiet, but it was weird because my thing clicked. I thought I lost everybody there for a minute. I don't like those strange sounds in my headsets. Yeah, I don't know. It always worries me where things are going to go, but, you know, there's a lot of things. You know, I grew up in what I like to call the doomsday eras. You know, since I was a kid, the world was coming to an end, you know. 1960, it was going to, well, and then Kennedy got killed, of course, it was going to end then, and then was going to end in the 70s, and it was going to end in 80 and 84 and 90 and 91 and 93 and 99 and 2000 and 2001, and now it's going to end in 666, and, you know.
Well, we have to wait 2012. That's the next date.
Well, at least that date has some ancient stuff to go along with it. At least there's some of the ancient culture saying, yeah, that might be a significant date. All the rest of these dates, by 2000, I just thought was funny. Everybody said, well, the world's going to end.
Yeah, it was. It was absolutely ridiculous. 2012, though, has no, in anybody's interpretation, has only one interpretation, and that's the Mayan calendar ends in 2012. Not saying that it wasn't up to the Maya that the calendar would start over again with the year one.
Well, I find the Mayan calendar interesting because they say it's the end of this era and the start of the golden era. Of course, what they consider the golden era, not everybody on this planet may like, so I guess...
Yeah, well, the golden era to a Mayan might have been Cortez.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing. We got to be real careful here when we're interpreting what they're talking about.
And it's just like the works of Nostradamus. Nostradamus' works are like reading liturgical literature. You can kind of interpret it any way you want it to be.
Yeah, and that's the problem with a lot of those works is you can interpret them any way you want them to be. I've read a lot of Nostradamus' stuff, and it is in the eye of the beholder. And I have noticed over time that what's always bothered me about a lot of these people who could see the future is it was never noticed at the time. I'm not talking about, well, Nostradamus was, but I'm not talking about at the time of their life. Like at the beginning of World War II, no one said this was what Nostradamus wrote about. It was, what, 20 years after the fact. And there's a lot of things you'll find like that where people actually have gone backwards to make the quatrain fit to a particular
day. Yes. Absolutely right.
And that's just irritating. That's just irritating because, you know, if the man is as brilliant as everybody said he was, well, let the quatrains take care of themselves. Because we don't want to misinterpret them. If that's not the event they were talking about and it was something else and we think it's already gone and it hasn't even happened yet, well, we're only making ourselves go backwards there. So it's one of those things that I just kind of leave it alone and say, well, if it happens, it happens. If it don't, it don't. Not much that I can do about it at this time.
When it's all said and done, you get up in the morning, put your pants on, have breakfast, and do your thing.
Yeah.
And there's not much really, as an individual, that people can do about much.
Well, it's like when I was talking about the comet earlier tonight. You know, we can jump up and down and have big fits if there is a killer comet coming, but there's not much we can do about it. So, you know, really, enjoy the last few days of your life.
Yeah. Kick back, relax, have a Starbucks or a latte, you know.
Yeah, enjoy yourself. Well, because people always, I meet so many doomsdayers. And for some reason, this field seems to attract them. And I just meet so many of them. And first thing out of my mouth is, why are you in such a hurry to kill our planet? I said, I like our little blue ball. I said, no, it's not perfect, but yet I enjoy it. It's nice. It's pretty. There's a lot of nice, good people here. Yeah, there's some no good, ignorant ones, too. But still, you know, it's not that bad of a place to live. We could be on Mars or somewhere after all, you know? So I actually enjoy our planet. I mean, I always think there's room for advancement, growth, and education on our planet because we're young and naive, but... Really, I mean, we're getting better. When you really look back at the past, we're getting better. It's just, we're slow learners, that's all.
If there's any solace to anything, you know, being that we're talking about non-terrestrial events and extraterrestrials and abductions and UFOs and all that stuff, if there's anything to look forward to, I mean, you can really look forward to this. If something bad is going to happen that's created by us, we have a real good salvation. You know, if you're not a devout theist and think that the Christ is going to return and take us somewhere, maybe the ETs will, you know, do their thing and kind of let us live happily ever after on this little blue ball.
I got to say, after talking to as many contactees as I have, it does seem, regardless what goes down in this so-called alien agenda, at least a segment of the population of this planet is going to live and is going to live comfortably. But I don't know if it's going to be here, if it's going to be somewhere else. That's what's always bothered me, because I get so many contactees that talk about this off-world colony. And they're so vivid in their descriptions. And since none of these people know each other and they're giving me identical descriptions, it always freaks me out a little bit. They talk about how the planet works, how many ancestors are there, how many people will be coming from here, things like that. Now, when you get back to the Mayans in the 2012, if for some reason in the year 2012, on December 20th, on December 12th, if there's full disclosure, I'd have to say that was the end of the era as we know it and the start of a new one. That's for damn sure, because I can't see how information like that isn't going to change the world in ways that most of us can't even fathom. I'm sure we can try, but really and truly in the long run, I don't think any of us have an idea of where this is going to go. You know, we argue all the time, will it cause religious upheaval, social upheaval? Will it bring the planet closer together? What is going to exactly happen when this disclosure is made? And I guess that really depends on what's said after the disclosure. Let's say whoever's president, Hillary Clinton here in 2012, and she says, ET's visiting the planet, guys, has been for a long time. And that's all she says. Well, that's going to be an interesting mess in itself. But what happens if she says, ET's visiting the planet, and yes, they are abducting people, and yes, they do have a permission, and no, there is nothing we can do about it. Oh, well, hell, then what's going to happen? Then we're going to have a disaster of biblical proportions on our hands. So I'm not sure, guys and girls. I mean, I want disclosure just like everybody else does.
I really doubt it. You know, even if someone came out and said that in a high political office, I don't think there'd be much of a panic. I get asked a lot, you know, about disclosure and whether people, what would be the reaction and so on. I always give an example. I think that if you took a major freeway system such as here in Los Angeles during rush hour, and a big giant craft came down, you know, 3-4 football fields in diameter, and it landed on a freeway, you know, would people panic and freak and jump out of their cars and run and scream? I doubt it. I think they'd be on the cell phones calling Caltrans to get the thing moved so they could get home.
Well, I agree with that. I think they would be on their cell phones, at least most of them, the ones that weren't up there trying to touch the craft. But on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we've got to take a break, so I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study. A Stardust Radio production now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalva. I'm sitting and speaking with Dr. Roger Lear, and as soon as we return, we'll start taking some more questions, so please stay tuned.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
Attention songwriters, poets, and anyone who loves the United We Roll World Tour show as much as we do. Our terrific Soldier Support radio show needs a theme song, and we're having a contest to find one. There's a $500 publishing advance for the winning song from Goodnight Kiss Music. They publish songs for film and television in Los Angeles, California, and the winning song will also become the United We Roll World Tour theme song for the rest of the year. We will also interview the winner and runners-up right here on Stardust Radio. Go to http://tinyur1.com/NEZ09 today and see all the details on how to enter. Or click the song contest link at the Stardust Radio homepage or at goodnightkiss.com. The deadline is June 15, 2006, and the winner will be announced on July 4th. Send us your great song for the United We Roll World Tour radio show today.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Millions of people are doing it on Pal Talk already. Meet new friends. See and be seen on webcams and share files. With real-time video and the ability to talk to all your AOL, MSN, Yahoo, and ICQ buddies from one list. Pal Talk has it all. Join hundreds of chat rooms or start your own. Visit www.paltalk.com today and download the new messenger for free. Pal Talk, communication beyond words.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Gentleman Talbot. I'm sitting and speaking with Dr. Roger Lear this evening. I hope y'all have been enjoying the show so far. It's been very, very interesting. Don't forget, there is a toll-free number at 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Feel free, pick up the phone, call us. I like hearing from y'all on the phone. Y'all sound nice and crisp and clear when y'all are coming in live over the telephone like that. I don't know. It's different. Better audio quality through the baby bells. The Kyle baby bell. You know, before we went to the break, Dr. Greer and I were talking about a couple of things dealing with the government. And to me, it's been really, really interesting to watch things like the V-chip develop. First we started testing them in pets. Seemed to go over real big with pet owners. They love them. I don't have none of my pets, but, you know, maybe I'll get some. I don't know. But it seemed to go over real big with the pets. You insert your chip, you know, where your dog's at. It has your dog's medical history and other things about your dog and current address and stuff like that. It's a pretty cool thing, you know. It works better than the little tags they put on them. Then they started testing them in prisoners. They first started testing them in, y'all are familiar with the bracelet program for prisoners. They put the little thing on your ankle and they send you home and tell you, got to be home between such and such hours or the little thing triggers. Well, they gave them the chips so that they could track them to see if they were staying home or not. Because the only way they could tell is if they actually physically drove by and hit the button to see if they were actually physically there or not. So the little chip thing worked out well. They could tell if they had left, if they had moved on. It was kind of a cool little thing. So now, getting back to our children and putting them in our kids, it's not that I think it's a bad idea, because like I said on the show a few minutes ago, I would have probably gave my son one if they would have been available. When he was a teenager. Of course, now he's almost 21, so I can't chip him. But still, when he was a teenager, I would have probably had a chip installed. Now, of course, when he made 18, it would have been his option to take it out or not. But I do see some big advantages to this. I do see some scary, scary, scary disadvantages to this in the future, but I do also see where there are some big advantages. I mean, really, let's be honest about this. Knowing where your 13-year-old daughter is at any given time is a damn good thing to know, especially in today's society in the United States. It's a good thing to know. It gives parents peace of mind. Kids won't be able to lie to you anymore, will they? Well, Mom, I'm going to the mall this afternoon, and you hit the button, and they're over at Joe Smo's house. You know, well, they're not going to be able to lie anymore because you'll always know where they are. So there's some advantages to it. There's some disadvantages to it as well. So I do find it interesting, and I do think it is a program that warrants much closer study. But I don't think it should be allowed to be a law. I really don't. Maybe for prisoners, maybe for pets, but I don't think it should be made to be a law for children. I really, really, really think that should be left up to the individual parents. Because, you know, if you live out somewhere that's very rural, very quiet place where it's highly unlikely anything's going to happen to your child, there may not be any reason to chip the child. Now, if you live in a big city where, you know, there is a chance while your kid's away to school or away home that something could happen to them, yeah, it's a good place to have one. So, like I said, I have mixed things on it, and I just kind of worry about it. Oh, let me see if Dr. Lear's back with us yet. Dr. Lear, you back?
I certainly am. I've been listening.
I was just checking up on you. Well, you know, it's the moral implications of this chip thing just makes me crazy. I really, you heard me just now. I kind of feel like, yeah, it's a good thing on one hand, and then the other hand, it's a bad thing. And the only reason I even think, on the other hand, it might be bad is I just know how people in power are. You know, they get a little power, they want a little bit more. And the chip is one of those things that can give you a lot more power. And so, you know, it's just one of those things that bothers me. It just does. But I see Gossamer's got his hand back up, so let's grab his question right quick. Gossamer 777, give us your first name and location. And you're live in there with Dr. Roger Lear.
Thank you again, Joe. Dr. Lear, David here again from Arizona. I was curious. I know you deal mainly with implants and that sort of thing, but I know when you spoke at the last crash retrieval conference in Vegas, you talked about having a piece of material that was supposedly from the Roswell event, and I'm just curious, has there ever been any other kind of materials or substances that you've ever come across aside from implants that you feel may be some sort of evidence of UFOs or extraterrestrials? Thank you.
Yes, the answer to that is a qualified yes. Only one of the things that I have been tracking is the implant material, but I've been besieged by large amounts of material having to do with UFO subject from non-implant sources. You're correct about the material that was believed to have come from one of the Brazil or Roswell crash sites. Also, one of the abduction cases that I've been working on for a number of years has a tremendous amount of physical evidence relating to the abduction phenomena. There's material that has magnetic anomalies. We found a hinge on the closet door, and which we could only detect one pole of the magnet. We have, from the same case, we have the famous claw that we wound up doing a very expensive, long DNA analysis on it, and we were almost ready to produce a paper to be published in a peer-reviewed journal when we found out that it wasn't a claw at all, but it was a slug. And the slug, we thought, you know, was the end to that, but it really opened up more questions because this claw slug material was found in Bakersfield, and it was a 97% match DNA-wise to a New Zealand slug and a 92% match to a sea slug. So how did it get from New Zealand to the sea into this guy's closet? And then the state that it was in, we had to forcibly cut through it with a scalpel in order to take specimens for the DNA. And after looking at slugs and conferring with a gastropathologist at the Natural History Museum in Los Angeles, he told us that slugs will just dry up in this manner and become that way. So, well, I didn't accept that, and we took slugs, put them out in the sun, and watched what happened, and they did dry up, but they dried up and virtually turned to powder and blew away. So how did this particular creature get into this guy's closet, number one, and how did it get into the state that it was? It was almost petrified. So, yes, numerous other forms of physical evidence. I've brought back material from Brazil. I've had something to do with the famous Ubatuba piece from Brazil crash site, and I'm aware of the discussion on that at one or several individuals found that it had non-terrestrial properties, and one or two didn't, and it was the one or two that didn't were the most vocal, but I am privy to the information where it did. So yes, lots of material around, lots of physical evidence. Nobody bothers to look at it.
Yeah, and that's the bad part. Nobody really does bother to look at it, which is irritating. But, you know, I did find it interesting that y'all did come forward and say it was a slug. I guess nobody's going to give y'all credit for telling the truth on that, are they? But still,
you know, because I like to tell it the way it is, because if you're doing a scientific study, you know, don't, and this has been done in the past, some UFO researchers will go to science, and then they'll get a report back, and then decide for whatever the purpose is to only report on part of the report, so it gets twisted around where the reality of the academic science is not present. I don't do that. I spent a long time doing a piece of material for MOFON. It took me almost a year, and I took it. It was a surgical material, and the I didn't do the surgery, but I accepted it because it was well documented. There was a videotape of the surgery. There was interviews with the doctor, interviews with the patient, lab reports. It sounded like a good case. Excuse me. Anyway, so we, you know, poured the money into it, and then it turned out to be a piece of wood. You know, and that's that was my report at the MOFON conference. You know, not taking anything away from anybody. The guy certainly could be an abductee, but what he had was a piece of wood.
Well, that's probably common to find pieces of something stuck in people. I know I've had a piece of lead in me, a piece of glass in me. They weren't alien implants. They were irritants is what they were, but, you know. So I had this one thing in the back of my elbow. I couldn't figure out what it's for years. It took like 30 years. It worked its way out of my elbow. It was a little piece of glass. Probably got it riding the bike when I was a kid or something. But it simply worked its way out. I see we have Alien Techno has his hand up. So, Alien Techno, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live and on the air with Dr. Roger Lear.
Hi, Dr. Lear. This is Phil from Colorado. My question is, are these implants you're taking out, are they, you know, exactly the same looking and size and shape and makeup of composition to hint that they were coming from one manufacturer?
We have four that are metallic, covered with a biological membrane or tissue, and they look like little cantaloupe seeds, and if you lined all four of them up in a row and looked at them, unless you knew where they came from or who they came from, you would never be able to tell the difference. Then when you look at the technological analysis of the metallurgy and also the biology, we see that it's almost the same. So this certainly looks like it could be a standard model used by somebody. We have others that don't match. And as I said, we have these three little grayish-white balls, which almost look exactly the same, taken from different individuals, two from the legs and one from the back of the neck. And they look very similar to each other. So, yes, there is a similarity.
Now I got these wicked scoop marks on the top of my feet, man. They're, and after life, my wife actually seen it one night. She's like, what is that? It's this weird little set. You know how the old vaccinations used to look for, you know, the ones they used to give you in the arm? What the hell were they for now? Chickenpox, smallpox? Well, it looked just like that, except it was smaller. And then I noticed about 2 years later there was another. All together, there's three of them. It's weird. I don't know. Don't know where they came from. Don't know what could have caused them. That's just one of those weird, strange things. You know, I do put
that. Well, you got to be very suspicious because you don't know what your wife's doing during the night.
Yeah, that's true, too. She's evil like that, man. You got to watch her.
She may have this tiny little teaspoon, you know, is down there doing something with your foot.
Yeah, she's, well, she's a contactee, full-blown. She's a great contactee. And she's one of the reasons I got involved with this 23 years ago when I met her. She was, her and a few other people were telling me, and she's a very bright woman. She said, well, no, aliens pick me up. I said, I ain't marrying you. You're a crazy woman. She's like, no, I'm serious. I said, no, you're a crazy woman. There is no way. Get away from me. And, but knowing her and the few other people that told me, because I knew who they were and where they were in their life and what their intelligence levels were, and I was like, well, they're not nuts, so what's going on? So then I started investigating, and well, you know, here I am 23 years later, still scratching my head, and I'm scratching myself bald trying to figure this problem out. But it is interesting to see how all this unfolds, and I do have to say, the more contactees we speak to, the more information and the more of an understanding of it, this so-called alien agenda that we do get. And it is interesting to see that there is definitely a course and direction that all of this is moving. You know, I don't know when it's going to all finally come to a head or not, but, you know, the 2012 date's just as good as any other date, so I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what's happening on that one. One of my friends told me I should leave town for June 6th of 2006. You don't want to be in New Orleans for 666. I'm thinking, why? It's Sin City. It's the best place to be on 666. Because the city itself didn't take any damage. Katrina didn't do anything to it. That's one another thing that was funny. When I first got home, all the news stations were saying, Katrina killed Sin City, and we're all laughing because the part they consider Sin City, which is Bourbon Street and the Vucaray, the French Quarter, didn't even get any water. No wind damage and no water. So I was
unreal.
Like,
unreal.
Yeah, so it survived untouched. The bad part of the city survived untouched. That just figures in itself. And what makes New Orleans seem to survive. But, excuse me. One of the things interesting about that is there were several reports down here within the first 5 weeks of Katrina about reptilians being seen in the older part of the city around Esplanade, places like that. This is a 400- and 500-year-old parts of New Orleans. And it was interesting to see that they were seeing them down there. What else was interesting about them is the reports were being made by local NOPDs, New Orleans Police Department, and some of the National Guard that was stationed down here, ranking National Guard officers. So I found that interesting in itself, too. You know, that was kind of freaky itself. It's just one of those weird things, but since the storm, I haven't had any reports of alien contact down here. Most of the people down here right now aren't from around here. They're from somewhere else, so we're not getting too many reports. We're getting reports from all around the area. But, you know, the Gulf Coast was one of the places I did a lot of investigations, and basically from Pensacola, Florida to Lake Charles, Louisiana is gone now, so there's no real nothing there to investigate. Hell, they won't even let you out on the beach after sundown anymore, so you can't even really get out there and do any sky watch anymore. It's kind of a sad situation, to be honest with y'all. But, you know, getting back, I know we're getting short on time. Oh, one thing about this, Dr. Leah. Tell them where the website is. Tell them where to find the book so they know where they're looking.
Okay. My website is simply Aliens Scalpel. That's all one word. AlienScalpel.com. AlienScalpel.com. You'll find a store on there where you can order books and DVDs. If you want conform copies of any of the books, and my newest one is the second edition, second revised edition of the Aliens and the Scalpel. They're all new information and some of the old material also. That and the other book, which I recently produced, the UFO Crash in Brazil, the story of the 1996 Farchinha, Brazil crash with the surviving ETs. Both of those books are available, and if you want a conform copy, in other words, for me to sign it, simply call 805-495-2613. That's 805-495-2613. Tell my secretary you want a book. She'll give you the address to send the check. And if you mention that you heard it on this show, we'll charge only $1 for shipping and handling. I think that's pretty fair. Yeah, we can get you also the DVDs that are available, too.
Yeah, well, I'll make sure that it's put on the websites. We do keep links for you on the websites, though, so these days we have a whole host of websites running around.
And also, one little pitch for the film, or this original Sin. We are offering only at this time 1/8 of 1 point in the gross profits of the production for $500. And if someone needs a $500 write-off and would like to become involved in the film, and they make the check payable to ANS Research, we will gift them back 1/8 of a point. So if they want to help, now we're trying to raise money. This is just seed money to put against the pre-production cost. But we have the first act of the script is done. We're waiting for the rest of it. We have four versions of a teaser done. We've got some major Hollywood interest in a good possible distribution deal, and looks like it's going to really fly. So anybody needs a write-off out there that's listening to the show, please contact me. Again, 805-495-2613.
Guys, I don't know how to find him now. It's not real hard. We pretty much have him posted on all the websites, so y'all should be able to find him quite easy. He's also in a banner of both the rooms this evening, so y'all can also find him there as well. Easy link, too. I like the easy links. You know, that's one of the reasons we use the acronym we use, because it was such an easy thing, www.icar1.com. I think if you can't remember that, you're in trouble. That's what I'm thinking. Well, I wanted an easy link because my personal website is Alien Enigma. That's www.alienenigma.org is my personal website, where I keep some of the research I've done over the years and personal experiences, things like that, because I try to keep that separate from what I do for the International Community for Alien Research, because it's a separate thing in itself. You know, research is research to me, and I don't like anything falling into that. When I'm an interviewing a contactee, that's what I'm doing. You know, there's nothing else in my mind, nothing that's happened to me, nothing that's happened to any other contactees, just that individual at that time. And, you know, and it's so weird because I remember the first time someone told me about one of the small grays, and I'm thinking to myself, this little 3-foot automaton thing. Matter of fact, I argued with my wife for years about these things were robots. She was right, I was wrong, by the way. They're not robots. But anyway, the thing about it is, you know, we've done a lot of research on them. We found out that there seem to be levels of grays, you know, and there seems to be a hierarchy to their structure and what's going on inside of it. And it was just interesting to watch how this developed after talking to contactees, because you get a little piece of the puzzle with every contactee you talk to. And it seems to add up. But what will happen is like when I had them describing the little grays, you know, I'm talking to this one lady, she's out of Australia. She's giving me an identical description of what my wife told me 10 years earlier. And I'm talking to another lady, she lives in New York City, she's telling me about, it's an identical experience. Well, after hearing this about 4 or 5 dozen times, I started thinking, well, wait a minute now. All right, there's something really physically going on here that really needs to seriously be checked out. So, that started my career into ufology, or my passion, I should say, because career means you make money, so I can't call it that, so I'll have to call it my passion into ufology. But I enjoy it. I gotta say, I meet a lot of interesting people such as yourself. I get to talk to a lot of people, which I enjoy doing. I get a lot of information. Just unfortunate these days, Dr. Lee, I figure at least half of what I get is just completely and totally bogus. But you gotta sift through it. I don't know how it works for you, but we get a lot of information that I have to consider as just incredible information. And some of the stories I get these days about the government and what they're doing is just cracks me up. Because I'm not really into the big conspiracy things. I try to stay away from the government as much as possible. I figure I'll leave them alone, they'll leave me alone. That works for me. They got their own headaches to deal with. I got my headaches to deal with. Even though I do support a political movement on, you know, like a voting bloc. But anyway, I know we're just out of time, Dr. Lee. I want to tell you again, thanks for being on the show. You're always a great guest. I look forward to seeing you in the future again. Where are you going to be? Are you going to be speaking anywhere soon?
Well, probably my next scheduled conference will be the Bay Area UFO Expo. But there's always things happening in between that are out of the country. So that we can say that for sure. Bay Area UFO Expo is probably coming up September or October. Also, there's another conference that I'll be at, which is the Norfolk Conference, National UFO Organization. That'll be in San Diego, but I'm not quite sure. It's either August or October again. And we're probably going to be doing another surgery soon, so I'm pretty busy.
Oh, I can imagine that. Well, I want to tell you thanks again. Hopefully I'll catch you at one of the conferences, get to sit down and talk with you a few minutes. At least that's one of the things good about the conference, ladies and gentlemen. You get to meet everybody face-to-face. You can get a little quality time in and talk with them. Again, Dr. Lee, I want to tell you thanks for being on the show. You were a great guest. Ladies and gentlemen, next week, Daryl Sims is on next week. That should be interesting. Y'all know how I like to torture him. On that note, guys, we're completely and totally out of time, so I want to thank everyone for listening to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production. Now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe McCallum, and I hope to see everybody next week. Stay tuned.
If you would like to continue this discussion after the show, join us in ICAR's Pal Talk chat room, UFO Alien Phenomenon, under the Social Issues category.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.